raining 1 minute, hot and sunny the next. Welcome to June in Greater Cincinnati. How's your garden doing? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our gardening show, we're going to talk about irrigation and drought and the plants that do best in the summer sun. We'll also get tips for how to keep your garden going while you're on vacation. And of course, we'll take your questions for the full hour. Joining me now are Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George. Welcome back, Brandon.
Thank you for having me.
Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline. Thanks for being here, Scott.
Thank you.
And Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher. Welcome back, Corey.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Corey, we've had some rain this week. We've had some not rain this week. We've had a little bit of everything this week. What should we keep in mind about watering our garden?
So the best tip I can give is get the organic matter into your soil. If you are tilling and weeding and not mulching and using compost, you're reducing your soil's ability to hold water. So yes, it's important to water if you're gardening right now, but it's just as important to keep that water in the soil instead of letting it evaporate. So being sure to mulch and being sure to amend your soil with compost is really critical to maintaining healthy plants.
Okay, so the just clay, that like the soil that looks like concrete that just has puddles on top, that's not good.
Well, yeah, because sometimes, especially with clay, it can just run off sometimes.
Yeah.
But so just making sure that take care of your soil, that I think would be, for me, the most important thing to remember.
Okay, our first tip of the program. If you've got questions about your garden, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. What are the different types of irrigation we should use for different parts of the garden or yard? Do you want to start with that, Corey? Maybe we'll go around and ask everybody about your favorite irrigation types.
So, I mean, for me, I enjoy watering just because it's an opportunity for me to get out and see what's happening in my yard. And really think about, especially for like vegetable crops, some things need lots of water. I find things like tomatoes don't need as much water as a lot of people think. They've got deeper roots. And if you're mulching, they may not need that much. But if you're growing more, you know, cool season things like lettuces or, you know, broccoli maybe, those sometimes need more water. So when I think about watering, don't just go with your hose and start spraying everything down. Actually think about what does each different type of plant need and put those plants that need more water together just to make it easier for you to water.
Oh, Scott, I see you nodding in agreement.
Yeah, I agree with everything Corey has said so far.
We'll see if there's a smackdown later.
It's inevitable. I would say, you know, also keep track because it feels like it rained a lot this week. But when I've gone out and looked at my little rain gauge, you know, it's fractions of inches. So, you know, you might feel like we got all the rain we needed, but then new plants might not, you know, they still need to be watered. And that's a big concern. You know, not only some plants need more water than others. And I do try to plant the plants together that like certain cultural conditions. So mixing a bunch of dry lovers in with wet lovers just creates a hard situation to make everybody happy with. But when it comes to watering, I like to water a broad area, especially with trees, rather than just water a close area. So the type of sprinklers that throw water into a general area are really good for the bigger plants that have roots spread out over a large area. The rule of thumb is an inch of irrigation or rain per week through the summer. That's just a rule of thumb. But if you want to measure that, you know, an old cat food can or an old tuna can, you could just set it where you're watering or where the plants are and see when it's full, you know, you've watered an inch. That kind of helps you measure until you can sort of get a sense of how long it takes to do that. But hand watering is like a therapy. It's a great way to end your day, you know, just kind of walk around the yard and just sort of hand water this and that. I love that. But ideally everybody has a full irrigation system with a timer, but you know what? That's not what is practical for everyone. The budget and everything on that is so high. And, you can manage it on your own very well with hoses and sprinklers and timers and make it work.
Yeah. How do you make it work, Brandon?
Yeah, you guys had great points. And I would say, too, potentially, if you're willing to put in the time, especially early in the season when things are just planted, you can have drip irrigation set ready to go. And then when it starts to get dry, it's the infrastructure's there. It's pretty easy to set up as a homeowner.
Tell me more about drip irrigation.
So basically, it's a hose that has perforated holes along it, usually evenly spaced. And so hopefully the pressure is pretty equal throughout the hose line. But basically, it's a very slow and long drip. Therefore, you're getting you're getting not as much water used that doesn't get wasted, and it'll go deeper. And usually you bury it slightly. Mm. At least we do at our office, and we put mulch over it. And it's just a really efficient way to water without wasting it to evaporation. And yeah, so it's also you're not getting any splash, really. Mm-hmm. So that's also a nice factor if you're concerned with fungal issues.
So how do you know how long to keep the hose going for that drip irrigation?
Well, I think depending on what the instructions will say, it'll tell you the volume probably coming out, and then you can kind of gauge from there. I can't give an exact guide. I think sometimes we would maybe put ours on for like 2 hours and then turn it off. And then you can kind of go around and see how moist the soil is surrounding the plant itself. And then you can kind of adjust from there to see how much you really watered.
And that's the thing with like irrigation systems that are installed for homeowners. 9 times out of 10, if not all the time, they're set for the turf. So they're watering frequently and shallowly, and that's not good for anything else. I would prefer to see them set to go every 5 days for a longer period of time to get that inch of rain, or every 7 days even. Turf can live through that. It can do quite well like that. But that is so much better for your trees and for anything else in the garden.
Grass is such a bully, isn't it?
It's a rough one.
Everything's about grass. Grass, grass, grass. You think, Corey?
It is. And, you know, in terms of the ecological benefits of grass, it doesn't do much for us. I think it might look nice in some cases, but ultimately it's just, it's sort of useless ecologically. I have it because I have kids and a dog, and they, you know, we do things. So, you know, I try not to judge people who have a lawn, but it's the expansive lawns where you're, you know, if you can no longer cut it because you have so much grass, that's when you should stop and think, maybe there's something better I can do here.
Yeah. I've whittled my yard down to like 15 minutes of mowing a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's like the most drudge job of my week. It's like, oh my God, it seems like, will this ever end? Yeah. You know, and once you start gardening and chipping away at your lawn, and learn the tricks and learn the plants and learn how to do it. I really believe people come to my yard, how many hours do you spend working in your garden? And it's like, I really don't think I spend more time in my garden than I would mowing. Mm. And it's so much better for the beauty and the ecological benefits that, you know, you drive past these houses with acres of lawn and you're like, why?
Mm. Yeah.
Why?
And Doug Tallamy is calling grass, he refers to it as the cue for maintenance now. So if your grass is getting a little longer and you know you need to cut it, fine, go cut your grass, but that should be your cue that all the other beds that you may have may also need some attention. So he's trying to like incorporate that habit of cutting the grass every Thursday or Friday or whenever, and start looking at your other flower beds while you're doing it. It's a little more relaxing and rewarding, I think.
Yeah, having that that routine.
Yeah,
Walking in your yard once a week to just see if it's dry or see if problems are arising. Mm-hmm. Is just such a good practice, and it's so pleasant to do, you know, unless it's in the middle of the afternoon and 95 degrees. Yeah. But, you know, an evening walk through your yard could just be the best thing.
Yeah. We're talking about gardening for the whole hour today. We have experts here to answer your questions. We want to get these phone lines ringing. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. That's 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Corey, we've been talking a lot about watering, but what about landscaping to conserve water? What are some tips there?
So I am a big proponent of reducing how much maintenance you need for your yard. I even though I enjoy watering, I don't want to be out there for hours watering, you know, lots of plants.
It's not your only hobby.
It is not my only hobby. That's one reason that I really promote native plants. Native plants, especially those from this specific area, are much more likely to tolerate periods of drought, cold snaps that come through. And so really thinking about what is this plant going to need after I put it in the ground. I know that sounds very maybe oversimplifying it, but if you're going to a nursery or you're going to the nature center or the zoo to buy your plants, think about, okay, after I put this in, am I watering it every day? Am I watering it twice a day? Do I have the time? Do I have the resources? So one, really plan out what species you're buying before you just get. It's really tempting to go to those clearance sections of big box stores and buy out all their plants like I do, and then you regret it. The other thing is think about clumping plants together that need more water. And if you've got wet spots in your yard, that's where those plants are going to go. But otherwise, choose plants that you have already researched that you know are drought tolerant. They don't need that much water. And then mulch. Keep mulch. Just really mulch. You get free mulch falls from the sky every single fall. You can put that on your flower beds.
You're talking about leaves there?
Leaves,
yeah.
Yes. It falls from the heavens every fall. So mulching and being very selective with which plants you're putting in and focusing on native species as much as you can.
But mulching right. Too many people do it way too deep.
Yeah, true.
You've got to keep it 2 to 3 inches and break it up once in a while. Sometimes like that hardwood mulch will get like a shell to it. Mm-hmm. And it starts repelling water instead of really helping you retain it. So you want to get out and see if that's happening. Rake it up a little bit.
And stick your finger in the soil. I think a lot of people just go out and sort of mindless. I'm guilty of this, mindlessly spray. Actually go out and stick your hand in the dirt. If it is wet within the first like 6 inches, you don't need to water. The plants will be fine. You can skip a day from watering.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Renee. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Thank you. I have a question about moss. We have an oak tree in our front yard, and there's a lot of moss that started growing under it, and now it's spread and covers about half our yard, and there's also some ivy growing in the yard. How do I get rid of that?
Are you still there? Why do you want to get rid of it? I love moss. I think it's beautiful.
Wow, here we go.
Yep.
Pro moss. Scott's pro moss, Renee. Yeah. Tell us more about your moss problem.
Okay, well, if it's not a problem, then I'll keep it. I just didn't know if it was fine or, I mean, because it is taking over our front yard. Like, I imagine it's just going to keep spreading.
And that's because the oak is shading out the lawn. So if you take it out, you'll be battling trying to keep lawn happy where it isn't. And if you keep it, you've got moss happy where you need it. It's a great plant. It fills those spaces with compacted, usually very shady soil. Sometimes it's lush and thick when the conditions are right. Other times it bears down a little bit. But I have a lot of moss in my yard. I absolutely love it. I foster it actually by string trimming over top of it. So the old grass, I string trim off. And the ivy, I would do the exact same thing and just foster the moss and enjoy it because it's a beautiful plant. And by all means, take your shoes off and walk on it barefoot. It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, we're in sync today. Absolutely. I mean, if you've got moss, people pay to have to have moss installed on their property because it can be kind of tricky to get established. Keep it, love it.
Wow.
Yeah, you're lucky.
Brandon, are you pro moss?
Okay.
Yeah, very. Okay. Especially since seeing it in Japan, cultivated intensely.
Let's start a moss appreciation society right here, right
All
now.
All right. Renee, you have really unlocked the moss love here on the show today. Thank you so much for calling. I hope that helps.
All right, it did. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, now we have a question from Karen. Karen asks, how do I get rid of bindweed taking over my shrubs and perennials? I've used Roundup, but I'm afraid that might kill my shrubs. I don't even know what bindweed is. Does anybody?
It's a vicious
weed. Okay.
A vine that from what I'm told, has a root like an arm deep underground. And it's one that I don't think you ever completely eradicate. If you can give it a shot of Roundup where it's not going to get on other plants, that'll set it back. But my best advice is just get in there and rip it out from the ground by hand. I've used tools like where it's under things and it's really thick, you know, just like a hard rake or something that you can go in and rip out a whole bunch at a time is a time saver. But it's a tough one. And you by all means, get it before it flowers and seeds because that just spreads it even worse.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. There are some native bindweeds, but most of the ones we see are not the good native ones that you want to keep around, and they can be really hard to get rid of.
Even the native ones, you don't want really in the yard much.
In your flower beds because they'll still show aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a native that you don't like, Corey.
I don't mind in the proper place. I think that it can be okay.
Okay. Do you have any bindweed tips, Brandon?
I would have said the same thing. I would just potentially, maybe if you apply a surfactant. I mean, I think the context of knowing when you're applying the glyphosate or triclopyr or some kind of systemic herbicide. But sometimes I think if you don't get good coverage or it runs right off, that might also be partly why you're not succeeding with using those herbicides.
So like adding a Dawn dish soap, a couple drops.
Yeah, or like you can even buy like High Yield, I think, sells a surfactant product too that works. But those sometimes can actually give you really great results that just using the product alone won't.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue with our gardening show after a short break. Now is a great time to call with your questions. The number to call is 513-419-7100. That's 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about gardening today for the full hour. My guests are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George. If you have questions for them, and we know you have questions for them, give us a call. 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, some of you might be looking up, trying to find a different number. Call this number, 513-419-7100. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Christine, thanks for your question, or thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi there. We are hosting our daughter's wedding in September at our home, and I am hoping to supply the flowers in our garden for decor. And I'm just looking for any suggestions for seeds or flowers that I could plant now or when I should plant them to be able to have them blooming in September. So, and one last comment, we use clover to seed our lawn and have found it to be much easier to maintain. So I was looking for your ideas on that too.
Interesting.
Thanks.
Sure.
First of all, good call on the clover. I love that in lawns, and it is a great filler, or even if it takes over, it's even better. For flowers by September, you're going to want to jump on annuals by seed, and I would go with the tall ones that would make better cutting flowers. Zinnias jump immediately to mind, the big, tall Oklahoma series or that kind of zinnia.
What kind of colors do they come in?
Pretty broad range of hot colors, everything yellow through red.
Tithonia, Mexican sunflower would
yeah.
be a good one too.
That would, and talk about a tall one.
Yeah.
That would give lots of flowers. Corey, or Cosmos, maybe the trick is like some of them aren't continual bloomers, so you might want to just keep sowing a succession of them, so that you're sure that you have something in bloom at that time. What else? I'm trying to think. Maybe poppies, but those are really tricky to time.
In the fall, maybe snapdragons. If it's
cooler,
if it's cooler, maybe.
And these are things that, that she could plant by seed now, or do you need to start kind these as little baby plants?
No, you could do it now, but not much later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's even Black-Eyed Susan and Indian Blanket or Giardia, some of those natives that that are a little bit faster that might still work.
If you wanted to buy perennials and plant, you know, plants, you could look at asters. But even a new perennial, like a one-gallon perennial in its first year, isn't going to produce a ton of flowers and maybe not on a big plant that you could easily cut from either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that helps, Christine. Congratulations on the wedding. That sounds like lots of fun, and I bet you'll have beautiful flowers. Now we have Angela on the line. Thanks for listening, Angela.
Hi. Thank you. So I've got a kind of invasive plant situation. It's kind of slow growing, but it's, you know, a lot of people might confuse it for bamboo. It's a really tall rush. It's about, you know, 30 feet high. And it's called donax. It's an African. Yes, the rondo donax. And so I'm, you know, a native plant person. I'm looking for what is the best way to get rid of this stuff. Right now, I've just cut some of it down and laid it down and put a tarp over it and hoping it doesn't come up under that tarp. So it's kind of an experiment, but I have lots of it still standing. I want to make sure it's not going to grow into, I don't know if it could invade pipes in my house or my septic system. And then my other question, other than that, is also a non-chemical solution. UC put out an article recently about Dennis Conover using cutting it basally and then with the bush honeysuckle and then just simply wrapping the stump in black plastic like garbage bags and then wrapping it with horticulture wire. And then I was just thinking, does anybody know if that's been tried on other, like I have in other invasive trees. I have rows of share and I've got some, unfortunately, some very invasive peach trees that I planted that are getting too near my septic. I've got some other things I have to try to take out. So.
Mm. Okay. Who wants to start on that?
If you're looking for chemical-free, I mean, with honeysuckle, part of the problem is even if you wrap the stump that you've cut, a lot of the honeysuckle spread is through suckers from the roots. So you would really want to put a tarp over more than just like the cut stump. In terms of the Donaxo, I would say you're doing the right thing just by putting a tarp over it, but it could take a couple months because it has pretty extensive fibrous roots. So if you tarp it like that, you're going to want to leave the tarp on, I would say, throughout the whole summer. And your neighbors may think you're crazy, but...
We know better.
But we know better. And in terms of going chemical-free, that's probably one of the best ways to do it.
Okay.
It's definitely a tough plant. It's not aggressive or not invasive like bamboo is, or, you know, it's a tough plant. You might, you know, I'm trying to remember if it's rhizomatous or I almost feel like you could just try digging out the crowns and really see what happens, because I'm not sure it would shoot up from roots or not.
And part of my judgment of the plant is because in the Southeast, it can be a big problem.
Yeah,
and up here, I feel like it's not quite as bad.
No, at the zoo, we use it because it looks like Africa, or you know, it creates, but it's always contained as well. But even, you know, I just haven't seen it be as aggressive as other plants. So I'm picturing the base of it where it really has very visible roots that are like a drape or something. Where I almost feel like if you got that crown out, you'd see success. It might not be easy, but you might have some success that way.
Okay.
Hope that helps, Angela. Thanks so much for calling.
Sure. Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye. We got a call from Richard, who couldn't stay on the line, but he asks, what can I use to kill nut hedge? Brandon, do you have any nut hedge advice?
Did he mean nut sedge?
Maybe nut sedge. Is that a thing? Okay.
Yes. So nut sedge is kind of notorious for being quite resistant to a lot of herbicides. And I think there's a product called Sedgehammer out there that I don't know. Do you know
that's
the active ingredient?
Like instead of sledgehammer?
It's just glyphosate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say use a probably pretty concentrated form of glyphosate. Maybe there's a specific product for nuts edge, but because they have all those little nutlets in the soil, pulling it can take you years, if not maybe forever. Mm-hmm. So you might want to, if you want to eradicate it, you want to use some chemicals.
And is this something you definitely want to eradicate? Is there no benefit to nut sedge?
We have native sedges, but that is not one, and that's not one we want. It's pretty aggressive, and the more you have, the more it will spread. So
it's pretty unsightly in a garden bed for sure.
Yeah,
okay. It's not too much of a problem in a lawn, but
yeah, that's okay. A good point.
We have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hey there. What's your question?
We have an area in our yard that's, basically standing water on days like today. It's under a bunch of oak trees, kind of surrounds our big outdoor chicken pen and coop. And I always look at it and think, you know, I could grow cattails here. I don't know what I could plant here that might be better than the weeds that grow up and the mud that collects and things like that. So I didn't know if you had any good ideas for me.
Is it shady?
It is very shady. Lots of oaks all around it. Most of it is shady, yes.
I would say I love Equisetum, the horsetail.
Oh.
That might be kind of fun. And I've seen it wild growing around here, around Doe Run Lake and places. And that might be a good choice. It's a little aggressive, but it would work well in a wet spot.
And maybe ferns, too.
Yeah.
Oh. Might be a good opportunity to try out some ferns. I mean, some of the ferns you'll lose in the middle of winter just because they'll die back, but things like Christmas tree fern will stay green pretty much year-round. I do like the horsetail idea, too.
Yeah, and those are evergreen as well if you want something.
Huh.
The
ferns, you get kind of a Jurassic vibe going there. Jurassic Park vibe.
Ostrich ferns.
And if you do use ferns, do heavily mulch it, and you'll see the ferns will spread a lot faster if you give them a good mulch layer to spread through.
Ostrich fern is a good colonizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gorgeous cool too.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Kathy. Great hearing from you. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And now we have Brianna on the line. Hey, Brianna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. What's your question?
I have what I believe to be creeping juniper based on the research in a flower bed on the side of my home, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to remove it or get rid of it.
It's an evergreen, like a conifer, but on the ground?
Yes.
Oh.
Is there a reason why you want to remove it? I mean, it might be fine. I was just curious. It's a good plant.
I wanted to put some native pollinator plants in that flower bed.
Yeah, so you should look for the central point of the originating of the branches, and then you want to dig up the stump. You could do that. That probably would be your best bet to remove it faster.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, some of the branches might be rooted, but they're pretty easy to pull out.
Yeah, it's not a difficult plant to remove.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Brianna. Hope that helps. Hope that works for you.
Thank you.
Take care. We have some other questions. We've got a question from Sean. Are the guests aware of any readily available replacement string for string trimmers that are biodegradable?
Oh.
String trimming is efficient, but microplastics and plastics in the environment in general are a problem. That's a great question.
That is a great question. I don't know. It's a product that needs to be made.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I've never seen one.
Yeah. I mean, they have the little blades you can buy, but most of those are still made of plastic.
Mm-hmm. You know, so. And I don't know how good those are.
No, I have no idea. That would be a good
idea. That would be awesome. Because just think of the miles of string that are out there just chopped up in the world because of that.
Are there metal strings that you can use instead of plastic?
If there are, I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would be a little, maybe, it might work. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we also have a question from our own Carlos Lopez Cornu, our technical director. He says, I've been dealing with poison ivy in my yard by laying down tarps and cardboard on top to try and kill it. But what can I do afterwards to make sure it doesn't come back? What could I plant for ground cover that is good for my yard that can outcompete the ivy?
Poison ivy is fun. I'm dealing with it in my yard.
Fun. Okay, that's a sarcastic fun.
It is. Okay. So, you know, I'm trying to learn to appreciate it. Again, it's native, and I want to you know, learn about it a little bit. At the same time, though, I don't want it in my yard. Birds love the berries in the fall.
That's why it's everywhere.
And so it gets everywhere. Aww. So there's very little you can do if your neighbors have it. There's very little to nothing you can do to prevent it from coming back.
Wow.
Unfortunately. But it does just, you know, if you're in your yard every once in a while walking around, get a really good pair of, you can get these really like gloves that go up your entire arm. Just keep a pair of those in your garage and just use those to pull it out from the roots, put it in a garbage bag, and then just make sure you're being careful when you're taking the gloves off. But there's really nothing you can do to keep it from coming back.
And there's no ground cover or anything that will cover it and prevent it from coming through. And I'd make darn sure it's gone for good before you plant that area, because you'll just be dealing with it growing through whatever you put in.
Mm.
And also be careful, like, planting in that area to make sure the roots are decayed. Otherwise, you could get poison ivy or the rash from planting your plants in there.
And don't ever burn it. My father-in-law learned that the hard way.
Same.
Yeah.
Did you learn that? Yeah.
As a kid, all over my face one summer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had it up all in his nose holes. It was terrible. Poor guy. If you do end up getting the rash, any tips for that? Any products you like for
dealing
with that?
Jewelweed is supposed to help.
Jewelweed does help. In terms of things you can buy, there's a product called Technu.
Yeah.
That's really good for post-exposure. And then you can get all of these varieties of like soaps and all of these things for in case you might have came in contact. If you just use a good hand soap when you get inside and wash your hands.
Or Dawn detergent.
Yes. And you should do it pretty quickly, right?
Yes.
Don't let it sit.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just fine. I like the Technu product for if you know that you've gotten near it and you've actually probably touched it. It just helps get rid of any residual, I forget what the main oil is called, ureol or something like that. So that's the only product I know of that actually has enough evidence that it can help take that chemical off.
Okay.
Jewelweed is a common weed around woods around here, and you would just break it off and rub the sap on your skin.
It's kind of like aloe, only native fruit.
And that's like once you have it to relieve the itch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have Debbie on the line. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, we've been dealing with creeping bent grass in our backyard for a couple of years, and we were sure, we've Googled and we've talked to different professionals, so we're pretty sure it's bent grass. And we've been, treating it with Tenacity, but then my husband tries pulling it out by the roots and applying Tenacity, but I'm thinking, because I think it's rhizomous, that he should just spray it and not pull it out.
I want to ask someone to answer this question very carefully. Are you going to side with Debbie or her husband?
If you want to use an herbicide, in many cases, I would say most cases, if it is like a herbaceous plant, we're not talking about a tree or a shrub, you actually want the chemical to be absorbed by the plant, taken into its the body of the plant so that you're killing it. If you're pulling the plant and then spraying the area, that may not work as well for you.
Debbie for the win.
Yes, I agree.
Is Tenacity the best product to use, do you think?
To be honest, I didn't know that was a product. I just thought you were really being tenacious with pulling it. I don't know what the active ingredient is in
I don't either. I know it's kind of a new wonder herbicide for lawns.
Ah.
And other than that, I don't do this kind of thing, and I deliberately don't learn about it.
Yeah.
Have you heard about it, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm the same. Unfortunately, I'm kind of ignorant with turf issues.
Okay.
What I would suggest for people who want to use any kind of chemical, there are companies, like retail establishments that you can go to where people know the products, they know what the safety guidelines that you should be following. And if you're a little nervous, seek out those stores. Big box stores can be great for your pocketbook, but not necessarily for knowing which products are best for using in which case.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to wrap up today's gardening show. If you're on the line, please stay with us. If you have questions, now's the time to call. 513-419-7100. That's 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with today's gardening show. My guests are Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline. If you've got questions for them, give us a call. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. As is our pattern, we have a number of calls and questions waiting for us. So, Chris, thanks so much for calling. What is your question? Hi, Chris. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
So, I've lived in the same house for 20 years, and I had probably about a 60-year-old maple tree. I'm not sure what kind of maple tree, but it was the main shade tree for my house, and it leafed out this spring, and then suddenly, last week, it died. I looked out the back window, and all the leaves had turned orange like it was fall, and they're now all dropping. And I'm both horrified and also wondering what could have caused this, and are any of my other trees in danger?
Trees seldom die overnight. Have you noticed a decline in it over the last several years?
Honestly, I looked at a bunch of photographs from the last couple of summers, and I actually felt like it was growing and looked very healthy. This spring, I did feel like the canopy wasn't as thick.
Yeah.
But I know it wasn't sudden, but it felt sudden, I suppose I should say.
Was there any construction or anything that, you know, major change in around its root zone at all?
The only thing I can think of is we did put a couple of like outdoor rugs sort of near the base of the drip line because my dogs are muddy. But otherwise, I'm not aware of any other kind of changes.
I'm not aware of anything that's killing maples in a severe way. You're not near Bethel, are you?
No. Okay. I'm on the west side of Cincinnati.
Okay. Yeah, I would say it's probably something mechanical, or that it's been declining over the years and you haven't really noticed. Maybe lightning or something like that. I don't think you need to worry about your other trees, though I would start paying attention to them. Just see if, you know, what you're looking for is are leaves that are less green, that either yellow, weak, smaller leaves, thinning in the crown. Dead branches, things like that. This is just odd. If you're really concerned, you could have somebody come look or take samples and send it to a lab. But it just sounds like something happened that killed that tree, and it's not like anything you need to worry about for your other trees right now.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure. I hope that helps, Chris. And thanks for waiting. Thanks for your patience. We have Stephanie on the line. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, I have a question regarding lady slipper orchid, and as I ask it, I would like to preface this by saying my partner is one of Scott's colleagues, so I want to make sure, hi Scott, want to make sure what I'm being told is correct, because you know they always like to think they're right. Is it impossible to find lady slipper orchids that you can put in your own yard that are not poached from the wild?
Yes.
It is possible.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, I can tell you one nursery I've ordered them from is called Plant Delights out of North Carolina. So there are reputable companies that will sell them to you.
Those aren't poachers? You're not ordering from poachers?
They're not poachers. Okay.
My own rule of thumb, and I don't know who I've heard this from, if you're paying less than $50 for a single orchid, it's poached.
That's probably true.
You need to be paying, you know, at least $50, $100 for a single, because the conditions to grow an orchid are so precise if they're outside of where they naturally grow that if you're buying one of the, you know, a cheap orchid, $20, it's somebody has pulled it out of the woods somewhere.
Yeah. So Stephanie, maybe your partner's not, he's just cheap, maybe.
Oh, I know who I know who her partner is. Okay. He's just a bad guy.
It sounds like Scott's got a side business here.
Okay.
No.
Well, thanks, Stephanie.
Just,
good luck.
Just kidding.
Good luck. And again, you are right. You are right. He is wrong. So well done. Okay, we have Eric on the line. Hi, Eric. What's your question?
Mike, I just have some comments, and that is glyphosate is illegal in Europe. It's been banned as a carcinogen, so I wish we could do that in the U.S. The other comment I had was about poison ivy, and what I use when I spray is a straight bleach from the bottle, which is somewhere between 5 and 10% sodium hypochlorite, and it's not safe unless you have goggles on and some skin protection like a long sleeve shirt. And the other thing for ivy, as I've plastered my backyard with tarps of various kinds from cut up waterbeds and whatever else I can find drifting around the neighborhood, put it on the ground, and that'll suffocate the ivy. But it's not fast. It'll take a couple years.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Any comments about that bleach idea?
I don't like it. Yeah, I think it's very dangerous. I would not recommend it to the general public.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for calling, Eric. We appreciate your comments. We've got Don on the line. Hey, Don.
Yes, thank you. My question is... I have a large yard with several very large trees, such as a pin oak and a sycamore. Each fall, I just blow the leaves up around the trunks of especially the pin oak tree, in a diameter maybe of 15 feet or so. And the buildup of leaves is considerable, maybe up to 15 to 20 inches. But over the year, they will settle down with rain and so forth. My question is, with this kind of buildup of leaves around the trunk and root zone of this pin oak tree, is there any harm I'm causing?
Potentially. You know, you want to make sure that the leaves don't mat down, first of all, and then create an anaerobic condition under the root zone, especially right there at the crown. You could cause root rots that way. Oak leaves are less prone to do that, but then sycamore leaves, I don't know. You just want to watch that. And, you know, it's a tricky thing, but you can have too much organic matter in the soil. I think at 15%, it starts to cause weird problems. And I don't understand. I haven't really learned all about that. But you can have too much organic matter. So you might want to spread those leaves out wider, mow them up so that they don't mat down, and then, you know, just kind of keep an eye on things. If getting to 15% organic matter is pretty hard to do, but if it happens, then I think you might see some issues.
Yeah, and I would say just pull it away from the trunk. You don't want it to stay constantly wet and cause some kind of rotting around the bark, so watch that too.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Don. We have a whole bunch of questions. I'll see if we can get through them. Jeff asks, very quickly, any thoughts about getting rid of thistle? I feel like I spend half of my weeding time removing thistle. Anybody have quick thistle tips?
You will spend half of your weeding time getting rid of thistle. It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is hard.
Especially if you're not going to use chemicals, it can be incredibly difficult.
Chemicals will work, but you have to be persistent, and it's best to hit them, you know, the young plant.
Go for the babies.
Yeah, go for the
babies. Okay. Baby thistles, not baby humans. Pam and David ask, how can we get rid of chameleon plants that are inundating the borders of our house? It was here when we moved in and has spread to adjacent areas.
A nuclear bomb. That is one of the tough ones, too.
It smells really so bad.
Yeah, it's a rough one.
Okay, we're getting a lot of tough questions here at the end, folks. One caller asks about removing Bermuda grass. It covers over my plants, doesn't want to use an herbicide.
You know, if you're trying to kill a plant, make it so that it can't get sun and then it can't breathe. So suffocating anything will work after a while, especially if you don't want to resort to chemical means. So in general, if you don't mind, put a tarp over it and, you know, kill it and everything around it, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. We have Rody on the line. Hey, Rody, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And what's your question?
My question is, I moved in my house about 27 years ago, and there was like 3 yucca plants in a rock garden. Now I've probably got 15 plants, and I really don't know what to do because I don't want them.
You're yucked out by the yucca plants. Okay.
Exactly, exactly.
Any advice for Rody there?
It shouldn't be that hard. Just dig them out. They don't rapidly reseed or spread. So I think you could just dig them out and be okay.
Okay. They don't fight back like some of this other stuff we've been talking about. Okay. Let's see. What about, where can I get native plants to put in my garden? Are veggies and fruit okay to put with the native plants?
They are, and they're great with the native plants. And as it happens, we have a native plant sale at our Long Branch Farm location in Goshen at 6926 Gaynor Road. What's great about it is we're giving 10% off on plants for members of the Nature Center. If you're not a member of the Nature Center, you can actually get in free on July 12th and July 13th between 9 and 4 and get your plant, and you can get a membership for 10% off for that as well.
Okay. Scott, do you have a real quick zoo?
Yeah, we have 3 sales coming up in the fall. I don't have that dates handy, but we'll be posting those online sometime mid-July, I think.
Okay, and you also have the speaker series coming up in August, right?
Yeah, we have we have our plant trials day August 28th. A great lineup of speakers, and then also a native plant symposium with a really great lineup. Corey will even be there. I know that for a fact.
Okay.
That's November 22nd.
Okay. We have an email from one caller asked, how can I get rid of wild strawberries? Anybody have tips for that?
Just pull it.
Yeah, pull it.
Okay. Well, that's an easy one. No flamethrowers needed. Okay. Aaron emails, hello, if there is no HOA, is it legal in Ohio to let your yard go to meadow? Are there county by county or town specific rules? I'd like to see my yard become a meadow, but I'm worried what the rules are. And then somebody needs to give this answer in like 20 or 30 seconds.
Check with your local your local government.
Yep. Usually townships and counties will have a very specific set of ordinances that you can find on their website. Probably your townships are probably the best place to start.
Okay. Have you had a lot of people doing that in Kenton County?
Probably not. But I would say, too, don't also think just letting a lawn grow will be a great alternative, because you could potentially kill that and then replace it with pollinator plants or those that support wildlife better than just a lawn that's just not mowed. So think about that too.
And talk to your neighbors. That can be really important. Talk to your neighbors, make sure they're on board.
And mow edges so it looks intentional.
Yes.
I've been talking with Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline, and Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.